Power Records presents...
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm one of your hosts, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is my pal and power, Chris Franklin. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
Very, very well. This is an exciting show for multiple reasons. We also have a very special guest, the better half of the Franklin family, Cindy Franklin. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. We're very, very happy to have you here on this show because we are going to talk about two kind of literary adaptations from the Power Records line, which a lot of people don't even know about, that they don't even know they even exist. Little Women.
Right.
And very similarly, Robin Hood. So we're going to be talking about those two records. It's very, very exciting. Cindy's along to talk with us about The Little Women. But before we get to that, we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
Well, because we are going to cover Robin Hood and because it has a cover by Neil Adams and or his continuity associates, I picked Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Hard Traveling Heroes Deluxe Hardcover. This stunning deluxe edition features the classic 1970s team-ups in which Green Lantern and Green Arrow confronted menaces including racism, poverty, and drug abuse. Collect stories from Green Lantern, Green Arrow 76 through 87 and 89, plus stories from The Flash 217 through 219 and 226. And, of course, that's by Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams. The original retail price was $49.99. In-stock trades price is $28.99. You save 42%, and every comic fan should have this in their library.
Agreed. Absolutely great pick, of course. And for me, I tried to find a comic book version of Little Women, but apparently there isn't one other than this Power Record we're going to talk about. So I got close, which is Sense and Sensibility Manga Classics. This is Sense and Sensibility done as manga. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know this was a thing that existed. It was written, of course, by Jane Austen. The artist is Po Tae, and it is basically the story of the Sense and Sensibility. It's 308 pages. The normal price is $19.99. In-stock trades price is $14.99. You save 25%. So for these and all your other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com, and we thank them for their support. Okay, everybody. So, Cindy, before we get started talking about the Power Record in question, what is your history with Little Women? As someone and a librarian, I imagine you're intimately familiar with this story.
Of course. Little Women, of course, is one of those stories that any girl my age, well, I'm a woman now, but any woman has read this at some point or another during her later elementary, middle school years. And it's one of those stories that it's supposed to be, you know, this is how you're supposed to act and feel for others. And, you know, it shows a great deal of empathy and everything else. And there's actually, and people don't realize this, there are four books in the story of Little Women. So I didn't realize that there was four of them until I got to looking up for this particular episode, because I read Little Women, I read Little Men, I read Joe's Boys, and there's a fourth one that I was not aware of. I'm trying to remember the name of it. I just saw it the other day.
Yeah, we saw it.
The Quest for Peace.
Yeah, exactly. But there are four in the particular series. And it is one of those stories. One of the reasons that I really like Little Women is because your two people that you think should end up together don't. And that's something that you don't normally see, because usually it's very pat, very, okay, boy, girl, and you know, the boy and the girl, they automatically get together, but in this one, they don't. And that was the first time I'd ever come across that. And it's not very common for that to happen. Mm. You can automatically see the romantic pairing coming, and then, oh, wait, in Little Women, So
I didn't even know that there were other books in this. I thought it was just Little Women. I didn't even know that there was a second, let alone two more after that.
Right, exactly. But there are four books in this particular series. And like I said, it's Little Women, Little Men, Joe's Boys, and then there's a fourth one.
Is it a marriage or wedding or something?
Yes, Little Wives.
Little Wives,
that's
okay.
What it is.
Oh, there you go. All right. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good save. I meant to take a picture of it, and I didn't, because we were in Joseph Beth the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah. And I remember that after the fact, because like I said, I knew about Little Men, and I knew about Joe's Boys, but I didn't know there was a fourth one. So, yeah.
Well, now you got to read it.
Yeah, probably so.
Cool. All right, well, so we're going to talk about this adaptation and some of the other versions of Little Women after we play the record. So let's get right to it. So everybody sit back and enjoy this Power Records presentation of Louisa May Alcott's Little Women.
Christmas just doesn't seem like Christmas without presents.
Don't be so stubborn, Josephine March. Come and help your three sisters trim this tree. You know why Mother decided against presents this year? Father is away at war, and we face a long, hard winter. We have to make sacrifices.
I know, Meg. We all have to do our share. You're only 16, and you work full-time as a tutor. I'm barely 15, and I have to spend my days as a companion to a grouchy, nervous old lady. Our young sister Beth is responsible for cleaning the house and washing the dishes. Even little Amy pitches in.
You bet I do.
But I have something to confess. I know I agreed not to expect any presents, but I didn't want Mother to miss out on Christmas. She works so hard and deserves a little fun, so I bought her something with my own money.
Meg, why are you smiling?
Instead of buying a new party dress, I bought a present for Mother, too.
I needed a hat and scarf for her. I saved my lunch money to buy her a new comb.
At last, Christmas is starting to seem like Christmas.
Girls, look. Coming up the walk, it's Mother.
I'm happy to find all my girls in such good spirits, and I have a treat for you. It's a nice long letter from your father. He is doing well and thinks he'll get through the winter better than we feared.
When will he be coming home, Mommy?
Not for a long, long time. We must all stick together and be brave a while longer. And now, I have another sacrifice to ask of you.
What is it, Mommy?
You all know the Hummels.
Yes, they're even poorer than we are.
Mr. Hummel is out of work, and Mrs. Hummel is very sick. I know you girls were planning on a big Christmas dinner, but I think it would be much more charitable to give it to the Hummels instead.
Wow, that's loving our neighbors better than we love ourselves.
Let's do it. The Hummels have nothing, but we've got each other.
That's right. Come on, Joe. Help me pack these dishes.
Oh, all right.
It's 1 week later. Joe and Meg have been invited to their first New Year's Eve party.
Party. Meg, you seem to have trouble standing up straight.
Oh, it's these high-heeled shoes. Joe, those two gentlemen seem to be staring at us.
I know the young one. He's a neighbor of ours who's always throwing snowballs at me.
I think he likes you.
Maybe. Oh, look! He and his friend are coming this way. Meg, where are you going?
To get some punch. Have fun, Joe.
Hi, Miss March. My name is Theodore Lawrence, but my friends call me Laurie. I hope you recognize me without the snowballs.
I do.
This very serious fellow is Mr. Brooke, my tutor.
Miss March, was that lovely young woman your sister?
Yes, Mr. Brooke. Her name is Meg.
She is very pretty, but she seems to be having trouble at keeping her balance.
Oh, my gosh! She lost her balance and fell into the punch bowl. Meg, are you all right?
I tripped on my high-heeled shoes. I'm so embarrassed.
Here, let me help you up.
Oh, I think I sprained my ankle.
We'll help you home.
Two months have passed as we look in on a very unhappy Amy.
Amy, what's the matter with you?
Everybody ignores me lately. For the past 2 months, Meg has been busy working, and you spend all your free time with Laurie. I'm tired of being left out of everything.
What's wrong with Beth?
She and Mommy are always helping the Hummels. Beth takes care of their new baby. Where are you going today?
Ice skating with Laurie.
I want to go, too. You never take me anywhere.
Don't be so spoiled.
If you don't take me with you, I'll take this book of yours and...
You hit me! I hate you! I hate you! And to see you again. Never, ever. I'm leaving.
Joe, it's cold out here on the lake. What kept you?
Never mind.
Is something wrong? You look angry. Say, who's that?
It's Amy. I told her to stay at home, but she followed me. Ignore her and maybe she'll go away.
All right, but... Did you hear something? Look, the ice is cracking.
Amy! She fell into the water. Lori, we must save her before she freezes to death.
The ice is cracking all around her.
That's my sister. We have to save her.
Amy, here, take hold of this branch and we'll pull you out.
I can't reach it.
You must. Please, Amy, take the branch.
She's got it. Now, pull, Joe. For the love of heaven, pull.
Just a little farther and we'll have her to shore.
She's safe.
Amy, my dear, sweet, precious Amy, I was so worried.
I came to apologize for ripping your book.
Forget it. I love you more than any book. You're my sister.
Please, let's never fight again.
We won't, Amy. Never, ever.
It is Easter time, and Meg has been invited to Annie Moffat's home for the holidays. Annie and her friend Sally are talking, unaware that Meg can overhear what they're saying.
Oh, Annie Moffat, you are very cruel.
I can't help it, Sally. Have you noticed that none of Meg's clothes match? She looks horrible. I knew the family didn't have much money, but you'd think they could... Shh, here she comes.
How could they say such nasty things behind my back? I should leave this instant.
Meg! Meg! Sally and I have a big surprise for you.
Oh, really?
We're having a party tonight. I have a brand new pink dress, which just doesn't look right on me, but I'm sure it will fit you perfectly.
I don't take charity, Annie.
This isn't charity, Meg. It would make me very happy to dress you up in style.
This dress was just made for you.
Well...
The sash. Don't forget the yellow sash.
And your hair. Let me fix it for you.
A touch of rouge is just what your cheeks need.
Annie, you did a terrible thing. Dressing the poor girl up, covering her with makeup. Why, she looks more like a Cupid doll than a young lady.
But, Daddy, we were only trying to help her.
You made her look like a fool. Now, hush up. Not a word. Here she comes.
Good evening, Mr. Moffat.
Evening, Meg. I hope you're enjoying yourself.
I'm having a fine time.
I believe you know those two gentlemen in the corner by the piano.
Lori and Mr. Brooke. How kind of you to invite them. Please excuse me, I must say hello. Lori, Mr. Brooke, how nice to see you here.
Joe wanted us to come and tell her how you looked.
What shall you tell her?
Miss March, you look wonderful. Nothing could ever hide your beauty. Please give me the honor of the next dance.
Marmy, where's Meg?
Joe, calm down this instant. What's come over you?
I must speak to Meg about Mr. Brooke. Laurie told me.
So you know that he intends to marry her?
What? But what did you say?
I said that Meg is too young to think about marriage, but he may keep company with her.
How could you?
Meg is wise enough to make her own decisions. Now excuse me while I answer the door.
Marmy, what's wrong?
It was the postman. I received a letter from the army. Your father is deathly ill. I must go to him. Mr. Brooke will accompany me to your father's army hospital. Now, you girls, take care.
We'll be all right, Mother.
Wish our best to Father.
We'll miss you. Hurry back. I
hate washing windows.
We have to keep the house clean while Mommy's away.
But she's been gone for 2 months. Is she ever coming home?
Of course she is. And Father's coming with her. Beth, is that you? Beth?
How are the Hummels, Beth?
Beth, are you all right? You look a bit flushed.
Joe, the baby's dead.
What baby?
Mrs. Hummels. It died in my arms. It had scarlet fever, and the doctor could not save it.
Beth! She collapsed.
Joe, she's burning up with fever.
Oh, no! Not Beth! Not Beth!
How is she, Doctor?
Not good. I think you should send for your mother.
Poor Beth. She was always the happy one, the one who kept us together.
Her fever's getting worse. She may not last through the week.
Poor Beth. She's been suffering for 8 days. When will her pain end?
If God spares her, I'll never complain again.
It's almost Christmas time again. I only want one present this year. Beth's life.
Joe! Amy! Come quickly!
It's Beth. She's dead, isn't she? Isn't she?
No! Our prayers worked. Her fever's turned. She's going to make it.
Oh, Meg! I'm so happy! So very happy! What a year we've had.
It could have been worse.
We still have a Christmas tree without any presents.
But this year, I don't care.
Neither do I.
Well, I have a present for the March family.
Father! Mother! You're back! Both of you!
My little girls grew up in this past year. You were all very brave, and I'm very proud of you.
Did Mother tell you everything?
No, Joe, but we can both see the changes in you. Meg is more thoughtful of others. You are no longer a selfish, stubborn tomboy. Amy is far from spoiled. And Beth is more precious than ever before. And we'll have time for stories later.
Let's go upstairs. I want to see Beth.
Why are you crying, Joe? The March family is all together again.
Yes, Amy, we're all together, but only for a little while. Meg will one day marry Mr. Brooke, and maybe Laurie will take me away.
But we're here now, right?
So we are. So we are. Come on, I'll race you up the stairs.
And that was Little Women. So, I mean, there's so many adaptations of this story. Of course, there was just the most recent movie, which is part of the reason why I wanted to do this episode, is sort of tie it into the movie. I have to say, I was really rooting for Little Women to win Best Picture at the Oscars, because I really enjoyed the film, and it ended up being Parasite, as everybody knows, which I'm very happy about as well. But I would have been perfectly happy to see Little Women Best Picture. So before we talk about the record version, let's just talk a little bit. How familiar are you guys with any of the four film adaptations of this story?
Well, I've of course seen the most recent one with Emma Watson, and I saw the one before that with Kirsten. Is it Kirsten or Kristen?
Kirsten.
But I've seen those two versions, and then there's another version with Katharine Hepburn that's like millions of years old, and I didn't realize that there was a fourth one.
There's one from the 50s, I believe. Yeah.
Okay.
Every so often they bring it up. So what did you think of the – now, Chris, you didn't go see the new version, right? You were off seeing a movie where people punch each other, right? You had to see
Yeah, I reserved my cinematic outgoings for people, men in tights. speaking of Robin Hood later.
Yeah, right. Nice tie-in. There you go.
But no, I have seen – you know, over the years, mostly through, growing up, you know, the older versions. And I think when was Winona Ryder in the one from the 90s?
Yes.
Yeah. We saw that one at some point. Yeah. I watched that. So I've watched different version. And my mom and my sister watched the earlier versions at some point. I've probably seen at least parts of every version
at some point.
I will throw in a little bit of trivia about the Winona Ryder version, Chris, which you'll appreciate, is that that movie, the 90s one, in the cast is Mary Wicks. And that is Mary Wicks's last film appearance in a live-action form. And, of course, she played the housekeeper in White Christmas.
Right.
That's where I know her from. But I mean, that's her. She did a couple other films for Disney. She did a voice for Hunchback of Notre Dame. But that's her final film, is the 90s Little Women. And so I always I've never seen that film, but I always kind of want to, just because Mary Wicks is in it, and I'm a big fan of Mary Wicks. So what did you think, Cindy, of the most recent version? Because it takes quite a lot of liberties with the story.
Oh, it does. It does take quite a lot of liberties. The part that I like the film as a whole. However, it did pull me out of the film when they would have the characters speak directly to the camera, and I'm like, what? You know, that pulled me out of it, because to me, that was not what I was expecting. And it usually what they were saying to the camera really didn't have to do with the story that much. It was like off to the side. And I'm like, what on earth? So I did not appreciate that part of it. So
they Ferris Bueller'd Little Women.
It's not quite that severe, but yeah, I know. And Greta Gerwig does take a lot of liberties with the time. Like, she jumps back and forth in time and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I really did enjoy it, and I thought she made it contemporary, which I always think is kind of necessary. If you're going to remake a story that's been done a bunch of times, why are you remaking it now? Like, why now? Right. What do you – and so I think it comments on sort of current events. And there's even this – there's this great moment in where Saoirse Ronan, playing Jo, holds out for the rights to her book.
Yes.
And as a creative person who is, you know, has had to kind of at times give up the rights to creative things, I'm like, yes, you know, and she's like, you know, well, if I'm going to, you know, I want to own my creation. I'm like, yes, right. You should own your creation. That's absolutely the way that should work. So I just thought it was a really terrific movie. And like I said, I was happy that it was a success as it was. So let's talk about the power of record. So obviously, when you're condensing a novel into 20 pages book form. I mean, this thing is essentially the Cliff Notes version of Little Women. But I mean, overall, what was your impression of it as an adaptation?
I mean, it was a fairly faithful adaptation. And as far as, you know, like you said, it's the Cliff Notes version. It hits the hot points of that particular story. So, and it also stays closer to the ages and stuff, because for instance, in the movie adaptation, they made them all closer in age. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the book, there were the large age gaps like you see in the Power Records version. You know, not large, but, you know, they were farther apart in age than they were.
Right.
So
did you feel like it jumped around? Like, could you follow the story much? Because it's just so brief.
It's one of those cases, if you hadn't come into it with a knowledge of the book itself, you would be probably confused.
Probably.
So, you know, it is one of those cases, because you're like, oh, this is when Beth gets sick. Oh, this is when they go to the ball, for lack of a better term. You know, this is when they give up their Christmas breakfast. This is, you know, it is the hot scenes of the particular book. But again, if you hadn't read the book, you would be like, dang, a lot of stuff happens to these people in a short amount of time.
A little kid falls through the ice, and then they give their food over, and then the little kid. Yeah, it is kind of like, whoa, all right. I've never read the book, and I hadn't seen – I've seen the Katharine Hepburn version before I got to this Power Record. And so I was just like, okay, I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but it's all right. I can follow this with the big beats of it or whatever. So, Chris, what did you think of it as a Power Record? I mean, it's kind of strange that they would pick this, because you have to assume – I mean, I guess they were trying to appeal to girls as well, because, I mean, this stuff was tended to be so boy-heavy with Superman, Spider-Man, and even the other literary adaptations, which we'll talk about in a moment. But Chris, what did you enjoy this as a audio drama?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, the production values of Power Records really come through. Like, in particular, the scene where they're at the party, and you hear like all the people in the background and her heels walking across the floor and things like that. It's very well done. And as far as the comic that comes with it, it's drawn by Dick Giordano, who knows, of course, one of the best that ever worked in comics, and also very good at drawing women. You know, he was one of the best at, you know, he's up there with John Romita and Nick Carty at drawing females that look like, you know, actual women. Although I will say the cover of it, which looks like it's also back Dick Giordano, they do not, the cover characters do not look a thing like the characters inside
no.
the book.
I mean, no, they don't.
Marmee is the mother is not, does not look like that. I mean, I don't know who all these blonde women are. There's one blonde girl in the story, Amy. But there's like three blonde girls on the cover and one black haired girl, which there's no black haired girl in the story. So I don't know if that was a coloring thing, but they all look, and like to Cindy's point, these girls all look like they're about the same age. But inside the ages are more, you know, appropriate, but yeah, I enjoyed it, you know, and I think that was, this is a good story to try out for, to reach the girl audience, because there is enough of drama and action in it. I mean, Amy falls through the ice and you know, Joe slaps her like, you know, Hank Pym slapped Janet Van Dyne, you know.
That's a really brutal pen. My book, you ripped it in half. Slap.
good for Joe. She doesn't have to live. She's not a comic book character who has to live with the stigma of, okay, you slapped your wife and now you're broken from now on until Michael Douglas comes and plays you, basically. You know, so, and it, you know, it's not a meme like Batman slapping Robin either, thank goodness, but, you know, so. But, yeah, I mean, I thought is, you know, they really did a good job and my knowledge of, I haven't read the book, I've only seen a few of the movie adaptations, and I'm not that familiar with it, but I thought they did a good job of condensing it down and making it an interesting story in this format. I think they did about as good a job as you could.
See, I think this is a great thing to use in upper elementary, middle school classrooms. Because think about when this came out. If you have a child that is a struggling reader, then you would be able to give this to them. Because back then, think about it, this came out. We would have probably had access to this, or mm-hmm. they would have still been floating around by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a great way to introduce those. I see this more being used in classroom settings, not in a personal home.
Okay.
So that's where I'm thinking where these classic, you know, adaptations came from, is for it to be used in the classroom setting more so than in a home setting.
Oh, yeah. Well, they could have. And that could have been the reason Power Records might have been trying to hit the educational market.
I mean, you know, that's just where I got it from. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, if I had been a kid and my teacher had said, we're going to pull out a Power Record and listen, I would have been like, are you kidding? Like, I won the lottery. That's fantastic.
But,
and
you know,
I would have been happy even with Little Women at that age. I would have been like, fine, whatever. I mean, you mentioned Dick Giordano, Chris, and yeah, of course, we knew that the Power Records had a lot of business with Continuity Studios or Continuity Associates, as they were called, and it made sense that Dick Giordano would draw it. But, I mean, it's good that they gave it to him because he really gives it visual life. You know, it's a very talky story. They do lean on, as we talked about, the action beats, because they're just trying to have something going on. Amy falls through the ice and the slap and the book rip and the knocking over the punch bowl and all that. I mean, there's as much physical action in Little Women as they can get into these 20 pages. But of course, it's Dick Giordano, so it just looks nice. It's a mm-hmm. really handsome presentation. And I will say, this is something Chris and I have always, you know, joked about on all these episodes, is that Power Records loves their hints of darkness. And this, for a children's record, it does feature the line, the baby's dead, which is like,
yeah.
Oh man, they always got to work something in. So
yeah.
It's a little dark.
Yeah. It's, I mean, here we are with the suicidal clown, you know, it's the ghost of a suicidal clown. Yeah. I mean, when they did that, I'm like, oh wow, they went there. And I mean, not only, and they even went to, like, it died in my arms, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, mm-hmm. she died. It's like, wow. Whoa. And of course, then she contracts the fever from the child.
And spoiler, she dies.
Does she really?
Not then, but she dies. Like, she dies within the book from this later.
Oh, it comes back on her or something.
Uh-huh.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
And that's the biggest thing about Little Women, because you have a main character that dies.
Oh wow.
And I mean, every girl that read this book has cried.
Okay.
You
Power
know,
Records. Well, so, they didn't go completely dark because they didn't end with her dying. So
no, but I mean, it's in the initial book.
Oh wow. Okay.
The
film adaptation, the most recent one, opens with a quote on a title card from Louisa May Alcott, where it says something like, I've had a very difficult life, so I write jolly stories. And I thought, oh, okay, that's, you know, like, she's writing, I mean, there's some darkness in this story, obviously, but she's writing her kind of like glossed over version of her life because she wants to write a jolly story because she hasn't had a jolly life. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting choice. You know, I thought that was a great quote to open up the movie with. So yeah, I mean, it's a nice warm hearted thing. And it's, I never really thought about it, Cindy, that it would work well as a instructional sort of for kids just learning how to read, but that makes total sense.
I remember when we were in elementary school, at the elementary school I went to, it's me and Cindy went to, we're in the same town, but we went to two different elementary schools, and they had in the library, there was an audio visual room, and you would go in there and you could, like, you know, put your headphones on and plug them into a record player and listen to records. Yeah, and I can't remember there being anything like this, but you're right. This would have fit right in there if you could have.
Do we know the release date of this? Just, you know.
These are late 70s, early 80s, right?
So, this is like 70, 78-ish. It's always hard because the Power Records was pretty sloppy with their copyright dates. So, but it's, it's around 77, 78, 79, I would say. There was a whole line.
So, see, it would have been in there.
Okay, all right, yeah. There's a whole line of these things that they did, and I never knew any of these existed. This was something that when I was working on my Power Records blog, and I was on eBay looking for these records, I was like, wait a minute, what's this? And so there was a whole bunch of these literary adaptations, and if you look on the inside back cover, and you can see some of these images on my Power Records site, powerrecord.blogspot.com. We'll have that link in the show notes. You can see that there was a whole bunch of them. There was an adaptation of Robin Hood, obviously, which Chris and I are going to get to shortly. And it lists Moby Dick, Huckleberry Finn, Davy Crockett, Robinson Crusoe, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Last of the Mohicans, and Gulliver's Travels. And there's a couple things. First of all, I have never been able to find Moby Dick, Gulliver's Travels, or Last of the Mohicans. I've never seen it. I've never seen them on eBay. I've never seen an image of them. So I am betting that those don't exist, that they were planning on doing them and they never got around to them, because I have never seen even one scintilla of evidence that they are actually out there. But I also find it interesting that these stories, for the most part, of the ones I listed, are very boy-heavy. You know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Robinson Crusoe and Robin Hood. It's all action stuff. And yet they did this one. Like this, it felt like, Chris, you're familiar with this, the whole idea of short packing female figures, you know, where it's like, you know, they make 12 figures in a line and one character is a woman. And then because they just figure nobody will sell it. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, it's like you only make one female figure. And it doesn't sell because you haven't made enough. You just made the one and you were only making it barely available. And then when it doesn't sell, you say, well, the female figures don't sell. And it's like, well, it's sort of interesting that they did one book aimed at girls in this line and the rest are all boy heavy. And we have no idea how any of these sold, but it would have been interesting if they had maybe tried to balance it a little more. Like, you know, maybe you could have a couple for girls as opposed to, here, girls, here's Little Women. Enjoy that. While the boys get nine other records to pick from.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely that. This is the Wonder Woman in the Superpowers collection. Yeah.
But again, going back to my original point, if you're going to use this in a school setting, by and large, who are generally your struggling readers? Your boys.
Okay.
And so therefore you need to have more selection for the boys to pick from. I mean, this is just, you know, what I have learned and things like that. Cause generally, you know, now there are some boys that will pick it up and, you know, run with it and everything else. But a lot of times your boys are the ones that you need to encourage.
Okay.
To develop that. Okay. So
interesting.
You think they would have maybe done an adaptation of The Wizard of Oz or something like that, you know, which I think by that point was in public domain. I had a Wizard of Oz book and record set. Was a traditional story book. It wasn't a comic, but it was, and I think it was a Walt Disney Disneyland production. So you know, which even though by that point Disney hadn't made Return to Oz yet or anything like that. So they just did that, the stuff like that. It's kind of strange that they didn't do anything else. But I guess to Cindy's point, if this was somehow a educational component, it makes sense that they would, you know, target us dumb boys that don't pick up.
I didn't say say that.
I know you didn't say that, but I was making a joke.
Evidence and science tells out that boys are more physically, you know, they get out, they run, they do this, da, 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 da. Not to say that girls don't, but the kinesthetic learning is there. If you can reach boys on multiple levels, girls are going to have fine motor skills sooner. It's just the way they're made, you know, and again, that speaks to that point.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Like I said, like Chris said, I am a little surprised that they didn't find a female-centric story that had a little more fanciful elements to it. Like you said, Wizard of Oz or something, as opposed to something that is so – this is just kind of a lot of people talking in rooms. But otherwise, I think they did a fine adaptation. Part of the reason Chris and I do the show is because we admire the creative gifts of these people. And so it probably was harder to do an adaptation of this. I thought they did a good job. So I think and putting it in the context you put it in, Cindy, as kind of an intro to readers to teach them to get into you know, actual reading, it makes a lot of sense. So I think overall it's a pretty satisfying adaptation.
Yeah, me too. I think, you know, and to the point, on the cover, it actually does say every word in the book is on the recording. So, you know, maybe that does point to the fact that this was a little more edutainment than the your standard, you know, Batman power record. Right. So.
Maybe so.
Well, I mean, one thing that I try and do is if I can find a book that has a record with it, when people come in and say, hey, my kid is struggling to read, I pick that out and the kids can read along.
Oh, that's fantastic.
There you go.
That's great. All right. Well, I said, I think that's going to do it for Little Women. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us. This is such a treat.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
All right. So, well, we are going to say goodbye to Cindy, and then we're going to take a podcast promo break. And when we come back, Chris and I are going to talk about some boy stuff, the adventures of Robin Hood. Stay tuned.
Coming soon from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Working together, we saved the planet. And I believe that if we stayed together as a team, we would be a force that could truly work for the ideals of peace and justice.
Every episode.
My name is Jean. I'm a Martian.
Every adventure.
Okay, you guys are so slow.
Every hero.
Whatever you think you're doing, if you present a threat to the world, the Justice League will take you down.
Cindy and Chris Franklin bring you
JLU Cast.
Whatever the future holds, we'll make those choices ourselves.
Don't say you don't love me.
I'll never say that.
Covering the complete animated run of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
And the adventure continues.
There's strength in numbers.
What? Like a bunch of super friends?
More like a Justice League.
In a far-off land of yesteryear, I sing of a lad who knows no fear. He fights for the poor and misunderstood. Oh, this is the legend of Robin Hood.
A hail and hearty good day to you all. I am Alan the Dale, the Sherwood Forest minstrel, historian, and musical rake. And it's my job to tell you the story of Robin Hood, the greatest daredevil the world has ever known.
When but an 18-year-old youth, Robin started his fight for truth. Away from home to begin his quest, Robin was sorely put to the test.
The Nottingham archery contest is in full swing, lads.
The town is full of young lads just ripe for a full fleecing. Here's a right-looking fellow now.
That's Robin of Locksley.
I would guess he was easily fooled by the looks of him.
Let's give it a try, eh, lads?
Say there, pumpkin. Do you not know the rule?
The rule?
Yes, the law that states that any stranger must pay the first Nottingham citizen who asks all his money.
I cannot obey this foolish law.
Then another law states that we can beat you.
What crazy kind of kingdom is this, where ruffians can attack honest men? Do your worst, you evil thugs. You'll find Robin of Locksley as good a fighter as he is an archer.
A fighter, are you? We'll see how well you do against rocks and clubs.
In just seconds, the three ruffians were routed. But in the process, one of his attackers fell upon a rock, mortally wounding himself. He was the cousin of the dour and dangerous Sheriff of Nottingham, who swore he would punish Robin for the deed to his cousin.
So Robin, a fugitive, took to the wood and started his epic fight for good.
Now,
hush. Your singing is hurting my ears.
Now, good Friar Tuck, don't you enjoy hearing about Robin Hood's exploits?
Of course I do. He's told by someone who knows.
I suppose you can tell the stories better.
I thought you would never ask. Now lean back while I tell the story of the three jugglers. No sooner had Robin left Nottingham Town than people joined up with him in Sherwood Forest. There was me, Little John, Will Scarlet, and Maid Marian.
And what of you, Tuck? Were you the bravest or just the fattest?
I may be a bit on the stout side.
A bit? When Robin first met you, he used you to float across the river.
That's not true. The rogue forced me at sword point to carry him across the river, but I dumped him where the water was deepest.
Just like Little John. He became part of Robin's merry men by getting Robin wet.
Oh, that was quite a day.
The two wanted to cross the same footbridge.
And neither wanted to give up their right of way.
So they fought for it. And John gave Robin a poke, sending him headfirst into the water.
Such a fighter should not be alone in the woods. So Robin offered him his hand in friendship.
But have you forgotten Will Scarlet, Friar?
Forgotten him? Why, he still pockets much of my earnings with his dang-blame magic tricks. A faster hand I've never seen.
Such talent should not be left to the Sheriff of Nottingham's domain.
Robin convinced him where his talents would be put to best use.
And that leaves just you, my fat friar. What are your talents besides eating?
Quiet! You want to hear the story or don't you?
Pray continue, good friar. I am all ears.
Well, then, it was a beautiful day in spring. It was such a wonderful time of year that the Sheriff of Nottingham decided to give a trip visiting King Richard.
Ho, Robin!
Ho, Little John! What news of the Sheriff's feast?
Nottingham Castle Courtyard is decorated to the very roof. Places to hide and watch are plentiful.
Excellent. Will Scarlet?
Here, Robin.
You and Little John come with me. The rest of you stay here until we return with news. And maybe some of the King's riches.
Robin?
Yes, my lovely Maid Marian?
The Sheriff of Nottingham is still out to capture you. This feast could be a trap.
True, Robin. You've done much to anger him.
Friar, Marian, don't worry. We'll be back before the sun goes down. John, Will, let's go.
So Robin and his merry men made their way to see if they could ruin the sheriff's day.
No sooner did Robin, Little John, and Will Scarlet hide in the tree overlooking the castle courtyard than did they see the sheriff honoring King Richard with a prized gift. A magnificent white stallion.
Boys, do you see that?
It's the most beautiful steed I have ever seen.
What a shame such a fine animal must be given to the cruel horsemen of King Richard's stable.
Well, maybe the horse will not arrive at King Richard's stable.
Robin, are you thinking what I think you're thinking?
I think so.
But, Robin, in the next few minutes, the king's guards will take it to the castle stable where we'll never be able to get it.
So we must steal it right away.
How? The courtyard is crawling with guards.
Don't worry about that, Will. Just follow me and take off your bright red cap. One glimpse of that among these green leaves and we're sure to be spotted.
What a wonderful ceremony, Sheriff, and what a wonderful gift.
It's the least I could do, Your Majesty. You honor us with your mere presence.
Not at all.
What's that? What's that?
Guard, what is the matter?
It's a team of jugglers, sire. They say they've come to entertain the king.
The king has no time to waste on jugglers.
Oh, no, Sheriff. It would be a great pleasure.
Oh, guard, let the jugglers in.
Yes, sire.
Greetings, Your Most Royal Highness. We are but three traveling entertainers who live from hand to mouth. If you enjoy our performance, mayhap you'll show your appreciation. What? How dare you ask for money? Be pleased you were allowed to perform for King Richard. Whatever you say, sire. Ready to go, my fellows?
Ready.
Ready.
Oh, they're very good.
Something about those three looks familiar.
Don't worry, Sheriff. They're just harmless entertainers. Look at the skinny one.
He's dropped something out of his shirt. Why, it's a bright scarlet cap. That's not a harmless juggler. That's Robin Hood and his men. Guards!
Oh, the chink's up, man. Let's get out of here.
Guards, guards, stop and close off the gate.
Way out there.
A quick, Robin, Little John, this way.
They're trying to run out the back. Close the back gate.
Guards, come on, man. Time to stand our ground and fight.
There they are. Quick, guards, catch them.
Let your thugs come forth.
Get them.
Here they come. Good luck, mate.
Heavens above, Friar. How did Robin get out of that terrible fix?
Robin, Will, and Little John put up a terrific fight, but they were all captured.
Well, Robin Hood, at last I have you in my clutches, and this time I'm going to make sure you never escape.
You have imprisoned me before, Sheriff, and I've always escaped. Pray do so again. I can always use a little rest before rejoining my men in Sherwood Forest.
Silence! You've mocked me once too often, Robin Hood. This time there'll be no ordinary jail for you, and this time your men won't get you out because they won't know where you are. This is finally the end of Robin Hood. Guards, take these men to the Nottingham Asylum.
What? You can't just lock us away with crazy men without a trial.
Take them away.
Let's see how you like spending a little time with Madman.
The only truly insane man in the kingdom is the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Get in there, you robber! Let's see you get out of this one, Robin Hood. Are you all right, Robin?
Yes, thank you, Will. I'm fine.
That's more than I can say about our cellmates. Why, they look like animals.
Probably because they are treated like animals. Come on, let's see what they know. I say, old man, can you understand me?
Robin Hood. You are Robin Hood, are you not?
Why, yes.
Did you hear that, fellows? This is Robin Hood.
Oh, Robin Hood.
You certainly don't sound like madmen.
Of course not. We're as sane as you. You, Robin Hood, are our only hope. Quickly, come over here.
What? To this little pile of hay?
It just looks like a pile of hay. Actually, it is a pile of rope we've fashioned from the hay. And underneath that...
A bow. A bow of stout wood. With a bow in my hand, we are as good as free. Will, Little John, come join me at the cell window. You see that stockade?
That squat building way down there?
Yes. That is where they keep the keys to our cells. I think I had better visit that place.
But how? These wooden bars in the window are inches thick.
Little John?
Stand aside, everyone. There.
Now I attach the rope to this arrow and send it deep into the wall of the stockade.
Perfect shot.
Quickly now, tie the end of the rope to the other cell bars. I'll use the hemp as a tightrope and slide down. Then I'll shoot the cell keys up with another arrow. Stand by, everyone. Freedom is at hand. I have a date at the royal stable.
So with a steady eye, mighty arm, and tremendous talent, Robin slid down the rope, knocked the sheriff's guard unconscious, sent the prison keys back into the cell with one swiftly shot arrow, and freed the entire jail population.
Strong of mind, great of deed, Robin saved them all with speed. When all were poor and things were black, Robin Hood led a triumphant attack.
Would you stop hurting my ears? The story isn't over yet.
Oh, sorry. Pray, continue.
Right. Now, after Robin, Will, and Little John returned all the prisoners to their families, they had to escape themselves.
Well, sir, it has been quite a day.
Indeed, Your Majesty. I'm sure we'll hear no more of Robin Hood.
Sorry to disappoint you, Sheriff.
Why, it's Robin Hood, and on my beautiful white stallion.
You blackguard, how dare you invade the king's private feast?
Don't worry, I'm just passing through.
Guards, stop that horse before he jumps through that stained glass window.
It's too late, he's escaped.
Oh, where is Robin?
There, my child. I'm sure everything is all right.
What's this? Tears? How unseemly, Maid Marian. You act as if something were wrong.
Robin.
And Little John.
And Will Scarlet.
You're back. And you're safe. But what is that glorious creature you're riding?
A present for you, my dear. Compliments of the Sheriff of Nottingham. We call him Freedom.
What a beautiful name. And so fitting.
You don't know how fitting, eh, lads?
Cheers for Robin Hood!
And that was The Adventures of Robin Hood, about as far away from Little Women as you could get, metaphorically and thematically. Chris, like, what did you think of this as a power record?
Oh, I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, I really liked the fact that Alan Adale and Friar Tuck are basically arguing back and forth on how to tell the story.
Yeah, it's a fun little meta kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a fun component. It also speaks to the legendary aspect of Robin Hood. Like, these are tales that were handed down and told from around the fireplace. I mean, in real time, even, because I know these guys know him. I mean, they're in his band of merry men, and they're still like, well, did you hear about this one? You know, that type of thing. So I think that's a fun thing. And I was always a sucker as a kid for Robin Hood, because kind of like you said on your Power Records blog, that, you know, Robin Hood was about as close to superheroes as you could get when we were kids. You know, yeah. you couldn't walk into a library and find graphic novels and trade paperbacks. So, you know, and there was a particular Robin Hood book. Of course, it was the Howard Pyle adaptations of the Robin Hood stories. And I don't have it in front of me, so I can't think of the illustrator's name, but I checked that out from the library constantly. And it just had spot illustrations, but I read a lot of Robin Hood as a kid, and of course I, you know, the Errol Flynn movie I mean it's it's still the beginning and end of Robin Hood movies as far as I'm concerned.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean there's other ones I enjoy for different reasons and guilty pleasures and such, but yeah, you can't really beat that adaptation, and there's a lot of that. I feel like. Visually, I think somebody on your Power Records blog suggested that Jack Sparling was the artist on this.
It looks like him, yeah.
Yeah, it does that kind of scratchy style of his. And I'm kind of hot and cold on him in a lot of ways, but in different things, I've seen some stuff he's done, and I'm like, eh, but I really like this. I think it's got kind of a real visceral feel to it, that rough and tumble kind of feel that fits. And I do think he was kind of channeling a bit of Errol Flynn for Robin, and actually for the sheriff, there's a little bit of Basil Rathbone in there, even though he was Guy of Gisborne in that film, not the sheriff.
But I
do feel that it's got a little bit of that, and you know, of course, that's the most famous version of Robin Hood, especially at that point. So it makes sense that they would kind of key off that.
Yeah, the cover, I think that figure at least of Robin Hood, because all these covers have the same format where you have a figure from the book kind of framing the – and then there's a big logo, and then there's like an inset image. So I'm pretty sure the inset image is Jack Sparling, but I think that pose of Robin Hood is Rich Buckler, because he did a lot of Power Record stuff, and it looks like Rich Buckler to me. So I think they got him and just do that thing. And it's like, I'm glad you mentioned the thing about the superheroes. Cause yeah, when I was a kid, and Cindy mentioned this in the previous segment about that, like you could use this record as a way to guide kids into getting more comfortable reading. And there are like all those kind of characters that are superhero-ish that as a kid you kind of like, or maybe it's if you start with comics and then you move into literature. Like I was like that way with Sherlock Holmes. Like, I read Sherlock Holmes stories because he was kind of like Batman, you know what I mean? But yet it was a book. My parents were happy that I was reading – I mean, they never gave me any grief about reading comics, but I'm sure that they were also happy when I was reading actual books. And Sherlock Holmes is kind of like the mid – or like Tarzan, you know? Like, there are these kind of midpoints where you're like, yeah, yes, it's a novel. It's a book, but it's also – got a lot of superhero trappings to it or whatever. And Robin Hood is right in there. You know, I mean, is it that kind of, I mean, look at him. I mean, he looks like a superhero for Pete's sake. I mean, well, I should say the other way around. Superheroes look like him. I mean, there's a reason why Green Arrow's costume looks like it does. Either version is because he's designed on Robin Hood. So yeah, I think this is it's a fun adventure. I do enjoy, like you said, the meta context of it, of having people argue about how to tell the story. That's kind of fun. That's maybe aiming at slightly older listeners to kind of get that, to kind of get the joke that it's like, oh, okay, we have almost kind of an unreliable narrator telling the story, which I enjoy. And it's certainly colorful and the action beats are good. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of Robin Hood using his bow and arrow in the story. Like, he really doesn't use it all that. He's really like, it's a lot of stuff with swords, and he comes down on a zip line. There is actually one kind of real fun page layout. I don't know what page number it is because these pages are not numbered, but it's when he zip lines down and knocks out the guard, and the zip line starts in the top row of panels to the right, and then Robin's zip line shoots out of the panel and goes into the panel below on the left-hand side. And we see, so it's and I just think that's a nice little visual treat where he's like, oh, he's ziplining out of one panel into another. That's a fun little that's very Neil Adams in a kind of way, and not something you kind of typically expect from Jack Sparling.
Right, yeah. I mean, he was kind of a journeyman comic artist, and you don't think about him being a Steranko or a Neil Adams with the – but that was really cool and really effective, and it also, you know, it's – it shows how he escapes. He knocks the guard out, and yeah, I had that in my notes too. I really like that. I enjoyed the artwork in this. So the coloring was a little iffy in a couple spots. Like I felt like the colorist made Alan Liddell and Will Scarlet look too much alike. It was kind of easy to get them confused, and they couldn't exactly decide what color Robin Hood's hat was from one panel to the next. But
it's brown on the cover, and then brown in some pages, and kind of green and red in another. Yeah.
And speaking of the Robin Hood on the cover, I mean, that, if you know, I know Neil Adams apparently took credit for it at some point, and maybe he did do some initial layout, and Rich Buckler finished it, because when Rich Buckler was in his Neil Adams phase, it's hard to tell them apart. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, but that flat front cap that he's got, that is straight up Neil Adams Green Arrow hat design. I mean, there's no two ways about it. You know, he's the only archer that ever had a hat that was quite like almost like a cross between the classic Robin Hood hat and then a ball cap almost, you know, that that flat front he's got. So, but yeah, he's definitely very Green Arrow-esque on a little, you know, it's kind of like, you know, there's parts of Batman and Zorro that different adaptations, you know, will borrow a little bit back from Batman, and of course, Batman borrowed heavily from Zorro, you know, and so it's kind of the same way with Green Arrow and Robin Hood, I guess, here and there.
it occurred to me as we were sort of thinking about when these things were released, which is like 77, 78, 79, that was probably not too far past when Mego did their Robin Hood line of dolls.
Right.
And it says something about the sort of eternal nature, at least in the olden days of the 70s. But I mean, it says something about the eternal nature of Robin Hood. I think that appeals to kids in that Mego could produce a line of Robin Hood dolls that really wasn't tied into anything. There was no big Robin Hood movie at the time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, all these characters have such great visual appeal, and they have all their accoutrements with swords and, you know, bows and arrows and all these kinds of things. And that line of Mego toys, if any of you out there haven't seen these, go to MegoMuseum.com and take a look at the Robin Hood line, because they are things of beauty. I mean, they are some of Mego's finest dolls, because they are lovingly crafted, and the boxes have like that stonework in the background. Like, I actually had them for a little while, not because I ever had them as a kid, but I just appreciated they're really beautifully crafted toys.
Oh yeah, they're some of the best. And when Mego did those and did the knights around the same time, they are just gorgeous, and they're really well done. And I think part of it too is from a business standpoint, companies like Mego, Empire Records, they didn't have to pay a license for these things.
Right, there you go.
They're public domain, and it's like, well, you know, we could do a Green – I mean, Green Arrow didn't have a comic at the time, but, you know, we could do a Green Arrow Power Record. We could do Robin Hood and pay nothing to anyone, you know. it's same thing with Mego. You know, it's like, well, we can do a line of – and, you know, it's like, well, you know, the monsters, well, we don't want to pay Universal for their likeness of the monsters. We'll do our own monsters. And Power Records did the same thing. They did their own – monster records, you know, which we've covered before, you know. So it's that well of public domain goodness, and that's one reason why Hollywood just won't leave the adaptations of Robin Hood and King Arthur alone, because it's, you know, I mean to my notion, there haven't been very many good ones in recent years, but even with some good talent behind them, they haven't been all that great. But it's just, you know, it's the idea that they can mount this big production and not pay out a whole lot of money to do so. And it's a brand that they feel like is an eternal brand to a point, and it'll sell a certain amount. And I think that's one reason why Power Records did this too.
Yeah. I said this whole little line of literary adaptations, like I said, I never knew these existed. This was something that maybe they weren't available in stores much when I was a kid, and so or maybe they were, and my eye just went right to Batman. You know what I mean? Maybe as a 7 or 8 year old, you know, there was no way my eye was going to be attracted to Huckleberry Finn when friggin', you know, Mark of the Man-Wolf was on sale. And so maybe these things were available, but I just had no memory of them. So I was so delighted to find that they existed, and I have them on my we have a record player now here at K2HQ, and so I haven't put them out yet, but all my Power Records are on a shelf, so you know they are available to listen to. And I'm glad that Power Records did this. This is fun that they did this whole side thing. And now, as I've said in other shows, it makes me think, what else is out there that we don't know about? Because I keep finding things. Who knows? Maybe they've done other adaptations for things. I have no idea. I mean, we discovered the previous episode, The Lone Ranger. We didn't know they did a Lone Ranger record until just a couple of years ago. So you never know what's going on. And some of these other adaptations are fun. I mentioned the list, and I think we will get to some of them later on in other episodes, because I love 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That's like one of my favorite stories of all time. So I'm glad that there's an adaptation of that. So yeah, these are both really solid little adventures. I think they're both, you know, it's Dick Giordano and Rick Buckler. I mean, they brought their talent to it. So they're both, I enjoyed both of these adventures quite a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting too that a few years back, I didn't encounter these either. I don't know when I learned. It might have been through your blog that I learned about them, or seems like there may have been one Power Record I had as a kid that did have some of these advertised on it. I can't remember what it was, but I remember being a few years back at a toy and antique mall in Louisville, Kentucky, and they had a stack of, I don't know, about five or six of Robinson Crusoe and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and they were still in the shrink wrap.
Oh, wow.
And I was very tempted to buy them buy one of, you know, each of them. But they were like, I think they were $20 a piece.
Oh, no.
And they were a little pricey, and also that toy antique mall had a lot of other toys and stuff in it.
Right, right.
Basically Batman and stuff and superheroes, and it actually won out over this. But if they'd been even $10 a piece, I probably would have bought them anyway. But yeah, that's – so to me that seems like – the way that they were shrink wrapped, it makes me think they were kind of remaindered product.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that, you know, I know when vinyl was really dying in the '80s, you saw a lot of kids records and stuff just dumped at like retail stores for like super cheap. They were just trying to kind of like the way VHS was when it died,
yep,
you know?
Yep.
And I remember picking up a few weird, strange, Superman Batman theme records, like this weird Superman theme that's like a barbershop quartet. I don't know if you've ever heard that. I remember it's like from another planet, muscles made of granite, X-ray eyes and super brain. It's just
what the hell?
Is it a bird? No, is it a plane? It's Superman. You know that?
Never heard of this.
I've got to find that. It's not a book and record, but it's not Power Records, but and it had. The B-side had some another lift of Neil Hefti's Batman theme, you know, another version of it. But, yeah, it was so weird. I need to find that and use on a podcast or something.
Weird.
But,
yeah, there's a lot of Power Records that if you buy them on eBay, you'll notice that there's like a little circular punch-out in the corner. And that's to indicate that it was a remaindered item. That's how they indicated that they were basically cut. Reduced to sell. You would used to see those on audio cassettes too. Sometimes you would see there would be a little divot cut out of the plastic case, and that was an indicator of this was these items were basically just get them out the door, and so they were piled up in a basket somewhere for 39 cents. And whoever thought they were going to get $20 each? That's crazy. Like, there's no way those things are worth $20. So
right.
Yeah, I'm sure that they kept getting marked down as they, you know, collected dust and stuff. So.
Yeah, I need to check. They might still be there the next time I go back. So.
Very cool. All right, well, like I said, that's Little Women and Robin Hood, the fun little literary adaptations. This was something I'd wanted to do once I saw the movie, and I enjoyed it so much, and so I'm glad we finally got a chance to do it and bring in Cindy on top of it, which is great. So before we wrap up, though, we're going to move on to listener feedback for the previous episode, which was Power Records Podcast Episode 22, which was The Lone Ranger, which we just mentioned. So we're going to go right into the comments that we got on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. First up is from Bruce Wayne Weaver. He says, I didn't have the Lone Ranger record as a kid, nor did I know of its existence until I discovered your blog. However, I've been a fan of Lone Ranger radio show since the 70s. I discovered old-time radio at about 12, and I've been listening ever since. Always a highlight of my week to see a new episode of Power Records Podcast. I'm excited to see it return more often than before. It's obvious you all love these stories, and I appreciate all the hard work you put into the series. Now, when can we expect one on Space 1999? And perhaps Kojak, easily my favorite podcast, and looking forward to the next episode. One last note, I put on Power Records for my young grandson to hear at nap time. He seems to like them. At 8 months, he may be your all's youngest fan. We put a kid to sleep.
All right.
I promise, Bruce, we will get to Space 1999 and Kojak at some point. I promise, we will do those.
Who loves you, baby?
Exactly. Yeah. I really can't wait to do Kojak because those are, again, bonkers records. But I promise everybody we will get to them.
Yeah. Gothos Mansion wrote in to say, thanks for sharing these. I had not heard these and didn't have them. I'm surprised because I bought most Lone Ranger stuff I found as a kid. I guess I didn't come across this one. I had this Peter Pan record that I think was released to capitalize on the Legend of the Lone Ranger movie, and he sent along a picture of it here. And, yeah, it's a link to it. And, yeah, it definitely was from the Legend of the Lone Ranger because it's got the same artwork, a lot of the artwork you saw. It's definitely Clinton Spilsbury and Michael Horse as Lone Ranger and Tonto. So, yeah, that was a cool – there's so many cool little discoveries that we're making about the Lone Ranger. Yeah. And it's like the Lone Ranger is such an interesting license because they've still managed to eke out stuff over the years, even when there hasn't been a big film or a TV series and stuff. But there's been a small trickle of stuff, and it's easy to kind of lose it and forget it over the years. But and I still want to get that Legend of the Lone Ranger lunchbox one of these days. God, that thing's gorgeous. God, it's so expensive. Jeez. Oh. Oh, yeah. James Williams wrote in to say, while not Power Records, there are 7 other Lone Ranger records in circulation. Wow. In the 1950s, yeah, Decca got the cast of the Lone Ranger to record at least 7 short full cast audio adventures. I'm not sure about the discography, but I believe the some were released as an LP and others as 45s. Decca also released a gorgeous wooden table Lone Ranger record player. Oh, how would you like to have that in your headquarters? I'm guessing that the record player's release coincided with the release of these records. Don't let Chris Google the record player. Cindy will kill him when he plunks down hundreds of dollars for it.
That sounds amazing. Like that sounds just like that sounds mouth-watering amazing for a nerd. If you're a Lone Ranger fan, to have a Lone Ranger dedicated record player, oh man, that just sounds so cool. So man, it's funny all the comments there, and we're gonna get to a couple more. But it's like they're all the same theme. It's everybody's like, I never knew this existed. You know, like no one saw this one. This thing just completely went under the radar. So I'm really glad that we did it, Chris, because it's like we got to present it for people that never knew it existed before, which is always fun.
Right.
So Matt Saroy says, yippee-ki-yay. Thanks for saddling up with one of my childhood heroes. I'm a huge Lone Ranger fan, and this episode was great. Rob and Chris have done a great job mixing things up with the Power Records podcast. With just over 20 episodes, we thrilled to the adventures of superheroes, explored the galaxy with the crew of the Starship Enterprise, been confronted by monsters, solved mysteries with the Scooby Gang, battled sorcery in the Hyborian Age, and now ridden across the plains. Thank you, Matt. That sounds like an iTunes review. Thank you so much. It's like a perfect sum up of what we've been doing. Thank you, Matt.
We're going to put that on the sleeve of the Power Records book that Rob writes.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Our pal Chuck Coletta wrote in, a very fun episode, fellas. The recent Dynamite Comics feature, The Lone Ranger and Tonto, have been fun reads and are worth checking out. Yes, the recent Lone Ranger movie is a misfire, but the final action sequence on the train featuring the classic William Tell overture is splendid. Yeah, that's the point, you know, 5 minutes before the end that the movie kicked in for me. I will say that, yeah, And not to beat I shouldn't say beat a dead horse when talking about the Lone Ranger, because we don't talk about Silver that way, or Scout for that matter. But my dad, I don't think, again, I brought up the fact that I took my dad to see that movie, and he's still like not forgiving me for that one. Oh boy, yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Brian Washington says, the book and record adaptation of The Lone Ranger was released in 1977 by Peter Pan Records. The original LP presentation was released a year later. The LP was reissued in 1981 to capitalize on the release of the film. I learned of the LP and the 45 read-along when I received the order form from a Peter Pan as a kid, and now I have them both as part of my record collection. I love that. That's really cool, the order form. That's really cool. I should mention, we put up on the Patreon page a Peter Pan order form that Austin Howe, I don't know how you pronounce his last name. I'm sorry, yeah, Austin Huff. Oh, excuse me, Austin Huff sent us, yeah. And it lists a bunch of the Power Records, and it's not a complete list because obviously it doesn't mention like Hulk or Man Thing. But these order forms, I think, in some ways are going to be, if you can like maybe like, you know, amass a bunch of them and then put them together, maybe the order forms could give you a full list of everything at some point. You know, you get the, because I mean, right, they dropped items. Things weren't in print forever. So, like, a Peter Pan order form from the mid 70s is going to be different than the Peter Pan order form from the late 70s. But if you could put them together, you might be able to say, all right, guess what? Here's the list. This is everything that they ever did. And of course, as we know, in the early 80s, they reissued a ton of stuff to capitalize on the movies, like Brian is just mentioning, because they did The Lone Ranger, they did Conan, they did Star Trek, they reissued a lot of stuff. So it's always hard to keep track of all these things. But someday. He continues right. He says, by the way, I missed the last episode, Gemini Man, Hollow Man, as I have both records in the collection as well. Just so you know, I actually watched the Gemini Man when it first aired on NBC. So you were the one, Brian. So imagine my surprise when I saw the LP at a store several years later.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a Manimal Power record somewhere. You know,
I will buy it if it is. I will get it.
I will buy it. What was that name? Simon Corkindale. What was
Simon,
his name?
Simon McCorkindale, I believe. Yeah,
McCorkindale. Yeah,
hell of a name.
Yeah, hell of a name. I actually really liked that show when I was a kid, though. So for all 6 weeks it was on or whatever it was. Captain Entropy wrote in to say, both the record and your commentary were very enjoyable, guys, and I've always loved The Lone Ranger. That said, I've long suspected that Tano was an intellectual powerhouse and more than half the overall capability of that team. So he wrote the Disney movie with Johnny Depp and Armie Hammer. Okay. These stories did nothing to dissuade me. Dan wants to lead his team after a gang of armed owl hoots through a narrow pass into a dead-end canyon, and all John does is express concern. The proper response is checking his saddlebags for loco weed. I asked my wife, who grew up out west, if this was as crazy as it seemed to me. She confirmed that all you do with a box canyon is drive your cattle into there and make camp outside the entrance. If you want to see what's in there, climb to the top from the outside and look down. Going in is not on the list of options. Well, see, that's what the Cavendish gang did. They already did that. So they said, hey, there's a bunch of rangers in here. Let's ambush them. You know, so I actually thought that was pretty funny. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, that's completely, as a suburban boy my whole life, that's like, I don't even know what he's talking about. Like, what? You wouldn't even know how to handle a canyon? I have no idea. Like, that detail in the story didn't even occur to me. You know, that would not have been the right thing to do. So that's amazing. Thank you. Thank you, Captain. And you know, good luck on the residuals for the Lone Ranger movie. I hope you get the sequel going. So Paul Wildenberger says, as a fan of the comic books, old-time radio programs, and the Lone Ranger TV series, this episode really hits my sweet spot. I must have been about 10 years old when I started picking up old-time radio cassettes, as they were sold at 7-Eleven down the road from my house. That's amazing. One of the first, if not the very first tape I picked up, was of the first Lone Ranger radio show episode. It was the origin story, and like Chris said, the first recording you played was a very faithful retelling. I know Captain Entropy says the actor playing Tonto on the record was Jay Silverheels. I agree with Chris, though, and think it was someone doing a pretty daggone good Jay Silverheels impersonation. Keep up the good work, fellas. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, we need to see. I don't know when Jay Silverheels passed away. We need to maybe look that up. I know he was on an episode of the Brady Bunch in the early 70s. I think it's one of the, like, the two, one of the, you know, where they go, the Brady Bunch has always had when they went on vacation, they do like a 2 or 3 part episode, and they go out to they go out west, and there's an Indian, Native American reservation, pardon me, and they befriend a boy who is the son of the chief, and the chief is Jay Silverheels.
Oh, wow. So, I just looked it up. Yeah, he died in 1980.
Oh, okay. So it's possible if this was recorded in the late 70s. It could be him. I still think it's somebody doing a very good impersonation of him. But it could be. You never know.
Never know.
Yeah, yeah. So Brian Washington wrote back in to say, one more detail regarding Gemini Man, which incidentally was the final LP bearing the Power logo. The track you played, The Alchemist, was actually the second track of the first side. The first track was actually The Phelan Factor, which explains how Sam Casey got his powers via dialogue. That might be why you guys are confused with the overall story. Oh, okay. So maybe we covered the wrong one. Maybe
so. Sorry about that, everybody. Sorry, Gemini fans. We didn't mean to cast aspersions on the show. right. Liz Ann, yes, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say real quick on Gemini Man that I think the Will Smith movie kind of came and went too without leaving much of a dent either. So
that would be another power record they would have made, and then they didn't make any money from it. So Liz Ann Oswald writes in. She says, I didn't even know power records made this. I had coloring books, etc. We'd sit around as kids and watch the reruns of the old show because I'm old, but not that old. Thank you. Ward Hill Terry says, I was positive that I had this record. I was all excited. I was going to send you a picture of me with it, but I am wrong. It is not in my collection. But that jacket looks so familiar. Rats. I have a couple of other Lone Ranger LPs of the radio show. I listen to a lot of old-time radio, but I haven't listened to Ranger in quite a while. It's always good, though. I think things like Brian Scat, Butch Cassidy, Dan Reed are so iconic to the overall story. One more thing. Whoever chose the William Tell Overture as the theme music should be hailed as one of the greatest music innovators of the 20th century. I agree with that, Ward. Yes.
Definitely. And I think, I mean, it's not – most people think of it as the Lone Ranger's theme than the Utah Overture.
Much.
So.
Pretty much. Oli Alameda says, I found this wiki on who owns the Lone Ranger. And then it lists – we were talking about that in the other episode about like who exactly – you know, what the rights are to this Lone Ranger, because he kind of seems like it's public domain, but maybe not. So here it says, from its inception, George W. Trendle had legal ownership of the Lone Ranger and characters associated with the Lone Ranger through his company, the Lone Ranger Inc. Trendle sold Lone Ranger Inc. to oil man and film producer Jack Rather in 1954 for $3 million. Well, that sounds like a deal. After Rather died in 1984, his widow, Benita Granville, sold the Rather Productions properties to Southbrook International Television in 1985 for $10 million. Classic Media then acquired the rights in 2000. DreamWorks Animation acquired Classic Media in 2012 and renamed the division DreamWorks Classics, which was then acquired by NBC Universal in 2016 for $3.8 billion. Its Universal Pictures unit currently has the rights to the Lone Ranger. So, okay, so Lone Ranger is not in public domain. You actually would have to get the rights to do it.
So that means that, at one time, and I heard this, if, you know, Disney made the last Lone Ranger film with Johnny Depp and Armie Hammer, and I heard that if it had been successful, they were actually going to change Big Thunder Mountain Railroad to a Lone Ranger ride and put, like, animatronic Lone Ranger and Tonto in the ride. So now Universal could put Lone Ranger ride at one of their parks. So
All right.
Do it.
Do it. All this talk of ownership of properties, we're wrapping up here, but I want to tell this very brief story. It has nothing to do with anything we've been discussing, but when else am I going to mention this? As everyone knows that listens to Film and Water, I'm a big Orson Welles fan, and I've read tons of books about Orson Welles. And there's this story where Orson Welles apparently was in a restaurant in the 40s, and he walks by, and at another table is Winston Churchill. And they had known each other, and Winston Churchill apparently flags Orson down and says, Orson, like, what are you working on? Because this was post-Citizen Kane, I guess. And he says, what are you working on? And Orson, either kiddingly or not, said, the story of Jesus Christ. And without him missing a beat, Winston Churchill goes, have you secured the rights? I just love that story that these two ridiculously famous people are just dicking around with them about making a Jesus Christ movie. That just makes me laugh. Again, I'm sorry, everyone. It has nothing to do with Power Records, but it just all this talk of ownership and property rights has made me think of that story. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, everybody, for writing in. We really appreciate it. Chris and I have been keeping up and doing more Power Records episodes lately, which has been a lot of fun to do. And, of course, big thanks to Cindy for stopping by. So thank you so much, Cindy. You have to thank her for me, Chris.
I will do that. Yes. Thanks, Cindy, for indulging us and stopping by and educating us boys who don't learn to read as fast as girls. So
I like stuff where people punch each other. So before we sign off, of course, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, you can go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. It helps keep the lights on here at the network if you support us there. And there's different pledges you can make, and you can unlock different rewards. And one of the rewards that you can get is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So we have special thanks to David Branning, David Ace Gutierrez, Gore Tolton, and R.W. Lovejoy for their support of the Fire and Water Podcast Network and Power Records Podcast in specific. So thanks, everybody, for listening. That is going to do it for this episode of the Power Records Podcast. I promise, maybe not next time, Space 1999 or Kojak, but we will get to them. I promise. So that's going to do it. And until next episode, drop the needle.
And turn the page.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home.